Welcome to the Tweed Couch Guitar Therapy Session, where we talk about all things guitar related. My name is Dr. T, and I am not a licensed therapist, but I play one on a podcast. Today on the Tweed Couch, we are counseling on LifeFest Music City, Tennessee. After over 20 years of festivals in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, Life Promotions has extended LifeFest to Johnny Cash's farm in Bonagua, Tennessee. Of course, with a new region and a new venue, you can expect some new challenges to present. Fortunately for Life Promotions, they have a recipe for success with bands they know, competent production companies, dedicated volunteers and workers, and a drive to make this festival thrive. But how did Johnny Cash get this farm? Why are we doing a festival on it? Did I get to play on stage? What gear did I play? How different is it to be stage management instead of a band member? And is it worth doing again? Well, we will discuss this and more on this group therapy session with Lloyd on the Tweed Couch. Well, Lloyd, thanks for joining us. I know that you are probably exhausted because we just got done doing LifeFest, Bonagua, Tennessee, Music City. And it was pretty tiring. So thank you again for joining me on the couch. Just don't fall asleep while you're here.
Absolutely. And it was hot.
I was actually explaining to my wife on how hot it was. And I said, my biggest complaint about LifeFest Wisconsin is I'm wet all the time. It's either from my sweat or it is from the rain that falls down. And in LifeFest, Tennessee, it was either I was wet because I was outside bathing in the air, or it was raining. So it was the same kind of thing.
Well, just a few days ago, I was watching a Gunsmoke. You remember the show Gunsmoke?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you remember that? It was on from like 1955 to 1975. It was a long, long, long run.
Yeah, and my dad has seen every episode at least 200 times.
Yeah, and rightfully so. I love that show. And so I was watching a Gunsmoke episode, and it was an episode where every character, there was sweat was beating on their face, and they're pitting out really bad all the way down their chest and their armpits. And what was interesting is that nobody commented on it, which got me thinking, I've seen episodes of Gunsmoke like where they look like this, and it's written into the script where they'll be like, oh, it's so hot, you know? And the water is warm. I need to go get a beer or whatever.
Yeah.
And nobody said anything about how hot it was, which made me wonder, is this part of the script? Did they spritz everybody with water in the face and then say go? Or was it actually that hot the day that they were shooting? And they just went from, but I was looking at that and going, oh man, can you imagine living like that? No air conditioning. No ice cube. This is just the way it is. You just walk around with your face all beaded and your shirt all drenched from your own sweat, and you don't acknowledge it to anybody. You just exist. And I went, I just experienced that in Bonagua, Tennessee for 3 days because all of us were exactly that.
We were just that on Johnny Cash's farm.
That's right.
Which is so fitting. It's amazing to me how much water I could drink and not necessarily feel hydrated.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yep. And actually, the other crazy thing is I remember when somebody said, well, it's only 84 degrees outside. And I was like, 84? Really? And they were like, yeah, but it feels like 99. I'm like, it shouldn't go up 15 degrees just because of the humidity. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it was warm.
So here we are. We're in LifeFest, and I think it's probably important for everyone to hear, how did you even get started in LifeFest? Because this was the first year of LifeFest Tennessee, but LifeFest Wisconsin's been happening for over 20 years. So, how did you get started with LifeFest?
Bob Lenz, that started Life Promotions, originally did a Power of One event that was a one-day event in Wisconsin that went so well, they're like, you know, let's extend this a little bit, and we'll do. I don't remember how. I think they might have done that 8 years or so, and And so then they built, let's do a whole event. We'll call it Life Fest. I think they still did Power of One first few years while they were doing Life Fest. Yep. So I was playing with a band named Echelon, and we would do schools. And I know your band did schools with Bob Lenz for a little while too.
Absolutely. And, yeah. It was amazing. It was fun.
Yeah. So we made a connection with Bob there. And so when the first Life Fest came around, he had asked us to be one of the bands to play at it. And we have the distinction of being the band to play the very first note at the very first Life Fest on the main stage.
Wow.
Yeah, it was us, followed by a band named All Star United, and then Third Day, and then the Supertones. Mm-hmm. That was the lineup that night. But we played the first notes at the very first Life Fest.
So you kicked off a legacy that is known as Life Fest.
You know, people remember beginnings and endings, you know, and if we wouldn't have hit it out of the park to start, it probably wouldn't have lasted 20 years.
No, it wouldn't have lasted 2 years.
No, not at all. We know it to be true.
Yeah, absolutely. So in which case, you started off with that, and I find it very, very fitting that I think it was probably a year later, I was on tour with you guys, and you really hired me to be more muscle, more of someone to just get crap done. Because you were like, yeah, you'll be our sound tech. And I was like, okay, I don't know how to do sound. And you're like, yeah, you'll be fine. And I ended up going on the road with you guys. And yeah, I ran your sound some, but really somebody else set that up. And, you know, I was more of a fader monkey and all that kind of stuff. But I could move a bunch of junk. And you didn't have to do it. And I could pack up stuff while you guys were still playing. And that was good and all that. And so my first induction into Life Fest was actually with you guys, and they had sound people. So I didn't have to do sound. Mm-hmm. So I spent most of the time talking with the bands, and I remember playing softball with Third Day. Because out in the back area, they had like, they were all playing, and there was another band out there playing, but I didn't know who they were, probably.
I remember this story, and I thought at the time you told me it was Audio Adrenaline.
Oh, yeah, it was. You're right. It was Audio Adrenaline. They were out there and they were playing. And I was like, this is amazing. I'm playing softball with Audio Adrenaline and Third Day. And it's one of those stories that obviously, even though the characters I can't remember, the memory itself still remains. And now you look at Life Fest and there's no way that the kind of sound guy would ever be allowed to go even be around those bands.
Well, it's so true. You know, when I was in high school, I went to, in Illinois, I went to Creation Music Festival.
Yeah.
And one thing that I was struck by was what you just described, that a lot of the bands, when they weren't on stage, would kind of hang out in the crowd with people. And like you said, and play soccer. Or I remember the bass player for Tommy Sims was playing for Whiteheart at the time, and he was camping with some friends of his, and they camped right next to us. And we sat around the fire singing songs, you know, the night after they played on main stage. You're right. It's not really like that anymore.
No, it's not. And, you know, I don't know why. I mean, part of it could be that the festival is much larger now than it used to be. So you got to be a little more careful. And the other part is I think there's a lot of bands that have that anonymity that they want to have, that ability to be able to have their personal space while they still are able to do their job, if you will. I know that John, the festival director, which we've had on the couch before, has said a number of times that really when it comes down to all the people who are running behind stage, the purpose is to treat them as if they're in their own living room. You know, would you ask for a selfie in their own living room? Would you ask for an autograph in their living room? No, you wouldn't do that. And so in which case, treat them as if they're not celebrities. Just treat them as normal people. And I mean, we do that and that's fine. But at the same time, they're not necessarily walking across the barrier to go hang out with everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Although they Life Fest does do that. Was it called Heart of the Artist? Which is great. And it gets them off the main stage onto a much smaller stage where they can do a little bit of an interview and people can kind of get to know them there. I do like that the artists do that.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, and actually a lot of them, they'll do that and they'll kind of just say whatever on their mind and then people can ask questions. It turns into a Q&A. And,
yeah.
You know, actually, all the artists are very approachable if you can approach them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not an issue.
Yeah, no, that's right.
So you started out as a band coming to Life Fest, but this year at Bon Agua, Tennessee, you joined the stage management crew. You became a fluffy white bunny,
mm-hmm.
which I explained a few weeks ago. And how is it different for you? Like, what did you notice that was so different about being part of stage management instead of being a band?
I love going to these festivals. As a band, obviously, is my preference. Reality is, if I could make enough money to be a full-time musician, that's what I'd be doing. But heck, most of us would be saying that same thing. You know,
absolutely.
It's just real. And, you know, and I'm very thankful for the opportunities I've had, but the network of friends that I've met over the last 25, 30 years, and so many of them are part of these, you know, that put on the Life Fest, you know, people like you and Jeremy and Thomas and John and Chuck. I mean, I could just go on list. They're all at these events. And so I really wanted to come and, you know, even though I couldn't be, you know, wouldn't be playing, although I ended up playing a little bit, I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little bit, but it's just so great to hang out with people that I think is my family, and the ministry of these events is pretty awesome. I've seen that firsthand, and it's kind of a mountaintop experience for a lot of people. And I love that Life Promotions puts them on. And to be able to donate my time a little bit to come help out and be with my friends and to, you know, do whatever, in this case, you know, wrap cords and, you know, set up staging and just make sure everybody has what they need. I really enjoyed it. You know, I'd much rather be on stage as a performer, but I didn't mind. I liked doing this. The only weird thing about it was the first time I've ever done it. And you guys, you, Thomas and Jeremy are a fine oiled machine. If you've ever listened to Mike Rowe.
Oh, yeah. The Dirty Jobs guy.
Yeah. He described one time doing Dirty Jobs. Like, imagine the worst possible job that you can do, and it's your first day doing that. So you don't know how to do the worst possible job you could possibly do. And, of course, the people that are there are trying to make it as bad as they possibly can for the TV show. He's like, that was my life every day. First day of work. You know, the first day of work is always it. And so me coming in. It was like, you guys are a fine oiled machine. And I started by the end, started to figure out, you know, where certain things are at and how you guys do things and what your dynamics between the three of you are. And it was really fun for me. I really enjoyed it.
I would say that you did an amazing job. There was a number of times where I went, well, I think Lloyd just outworked me. Like I had no more gas. And then I see you pulling a case uphill, and I'm like, why are you almost 10 years older than me? And I can't do that.
Because I wanted to go to bed.
Yeah, that's probably it. Well, I agree that it is very different in the sense that being a band, as far as I'm concerned, being on that side of things, yes, you have the travel. Oh, that sucks. Oh, maybe you have to load in some equipment. Oh, that sucks. And then you go play for 45 to an hour, and man, that's awesome. And then you get done and you pack it all up, you put it on the bus, maybe you hang out at the sales table, and then you're done. But when you're a part of stage management, it's a 24-hour job.
Yeah.
Like at any moment, you might get kicked in the bunk. And when I say bunk, I mean a bunk bed, not necessarily anything else. But you might get kicked and somebody may be like, hey, we got to get up because this just happened.
Yeah.
Because we got to deal with this, because we got to whatever. And it's different. You know, a band, they're really based off of performance. It's like we rehearse, everything's calculated. You do your working time is really short. That's it. Whereas stage management, you could be loading in a band. And then the next band, and then the next band, set the stage up, and then the other stage, and then the other stage, you know, setting up video walls, and and moving from stage to stage, you know, like hopping around, making sure everybody has what they have, driving the truck around, driving the trailer around, taking care of band's needs. And then there's the other duties as assigned issue that can also come into play, which in this festival ended up being that the tent got set up in the wrong place. And because the tent was set up in the wrong place, the porta potties were in the wrong place. And so now you have to like hook up ratchet straps and try and push those things to another area. And I tell you what, that's a crappy job in more than one way. But ultimately, this is what you do on the other side of things. How do you feel about being a part of stage management instead of being a part of the band? Like, would you do it again? If you were asked to do it again, would you do it again?
Yeah, I would absolutely do it again. What I was struck with by is when I, all the years that I was at music festivals as a musician, we'd play maybe two or three different time slots. The rest of the time was my own. And so I could plan out and go, oh, I want to see Crowder. I want to see whoever, you know, I could plan that out. Just enjoy the music that other people were making. Because we're always on call here and everything you just described, I realized that I didn't really get to sit down and really listen to very much of anybody, not purposefully anyway. It was just like, oh, that's kind of neat. And I'd stop and I'd listen. Like we listened to those guys that were a little more old school blues a little while.
Yeah, it was like Blues Council. Yeah.
Yeah, it just happened that we had a chunk of time that we were able to. And so I really don't feel like I heard that much music, which is kind of strange. And I'm not sure how that happened because I was running around so much.
Yeah, there was a number of different bands that we did end up getting to see over the span of the time in which we were going that really did sound awesome. And I was like, man, I would love to see their entire show.
Yeah. That's right.
But there wasn't a whole lot of time for that because there were a few times where it was like, okay, I could sit out here and watch that, but it's so hot out here, I probably better service going and sitting in the air conditioning for 30 minutes.
You know, and one thing I really wanted to do is, did you see that Life Fest had I donated blood at Life Fest shirts? Did you see that?
Yes. Oh, it was super cool.
And I so love that. And I so wanted to go donate blood and get that shirt, but it was so hot and we were, you know, working. I was like, would it be the smartest thing for me to give away a pint of my blood at this time? Probably not. And so I didn't do it, but I really wanted to.
And actually, the main reason why it was a good idea that both of us did not do that was because that was the same day that we ended up tearing apart a stage until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Woohoo! Yeah, wasn't that awesome? Remember that time?
Remember? No, I don't, because remember I also hit my head on the bus that day.
I do.
And that was the day that I was like, yeah, I have no idea what just happened.
Yeah, I was worried about you for a little bit there.
You're like, do you have a concussion? I'm like, yeah, I just don't remember things for a bit. I'll be fine.
Well, you keep telling the same story over and over again. And
it's the same story.
It's a good story, but
that's kind of like this podcast. I just keep telling the same story. Like,
well, truth be told, we actually could have got the stage all torn down and put away by midnight. We just didn't want you to go to sleep, so we pushed it all back so we could keep you up just to watch you.
It was for my safety. I appreciate that.
That's what we were doing. Yeah, that's what was going on.
Well, now is probably a good time for us to take a break for our sponsor. If you are looking for a way to help support the Tweed Couch and it costs no money to you, then check out our YouTube channel and become a subscriber. Also, you can tell someone about the podcast and share an episode with them. Thank you for listening and thank you for your support. Are you looking for a party with a purpose? If you love music, family friendly, and camping, then you need to come to Life Fest. In July of 2022, they will have two festivals once again. One at the Sunnyview Fairgrounds in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and the other at the Johnny Cash Hideaway Farm in Bonagwa, Tennessee. I'll see you there. Let's hear from another sponsor. Since 2003, the Cressman Guitar Company has been repairing stringed instruments and building custom guitars and basses. In 2021, Cressman started production of a solid body electric guitar with the goal of providing affordable, awesome looking and sounding guitars that anyone, student to expert, would be proud to play and own. Be sure to check them out at KretzmanGuitars.com. That's KretzmanN guitars.com. Well, I mean, this is a pretty cool place for us to be and to be able to do all this stuff. The very first Life Fest is on Johnny Cash's Hideaway Farm. I mean, that's pretty cool. And, you know, I kept walking around, like, the more I went around the festival, the more I thought, would Johnny Cash be happy? Like, would he see all of this happening on his farm, on his property, and go, yep, I like this. And I like to think he did.
Somebody else asked me that question, too, and I didn't even cross my mind. And I was like, oh, of course he would love this. You know, he built a stage on his property. You know, he converted that barn and put a stage in front of it, which I just thought that was so awesome. I wanted to play on that stage. Yeah. I really would love to play on that. So John Doherty, next year, hear that. I would love to play on that stage.
Yep. It's going to be Lloyd Garltz. And I will play bass or guitar with him. John's going to play the drums.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Dorsey will play bass. I need you on guitar.
Okay, perfect. That's what we'll do. And Thomas will run sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll do a duet with Lynn.
Yes.
And, it's going to be, we'll find a way for Beth to get involved as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. For those that have no clue who all these people are, these are all Life Fest, Youth Encounter, Captive Free. This is how I pretty much met all the people who are on the Tweed Couch, with the exception of, like, Jason. So,
yeah, that's right.
You know, it's interesting when you really look at how Johnny Cash got the farm. Like, the story on how he acquired it and the way it's being utilized now, you kind of go, dang, that is poetic. And for those that don't know the story, basically, Johnny Cash was a big deal. And he was playing all over the place. He had a manager who would purchase properties in his name, wait a couple of months, and then sell them off because they had Johnny Cash's name on it. He would make a huge profit, and then he would pocket the profit. Well, Johnny ended up figuring out about this, and when he figured out, he was like, that's it, you're fired. And evidently, there were criminal charges and all that kind of stuff. But Johnny went, man, I don't know what I have anymore. So he got a new guy, a new manager, a new business partner or whatever. And basically, they looked at all the properties he had and they were trying to sell them all off. And they said, yeah, we got this one, this farm out in Banagua. And he said, well, I want to go see it. He went out there, took a look at the property and went, yeah, I'm going to keep this one. Like, I want this. And it became his Hideaway Farm. And they actually call it the Johnny Cash Hideaway Farm or the Storyteller's Hideaway Farm, because this is where Johnny would go just to get away from Nashville, get away from the public eye. And he would invite out Willie Nelson. He would invite out Elvis. He would invite out, you know, Waylon Jennings. And, you know, it was just kind of one of those places where people would just kind of come out to. And they'd play on the farm. They'd play at the little store in town. And, well, in town. It's like a mile away. And it's the store and his tour bus across the street. But, you know, he would play for the locals and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah,
I thought it was cool. I thought it was a beautiful place. I thought that the idea that Johnny had walked that property and owned that area, and the fact that he was so into music and loved music so much that he would just be smiling. Like, if he could see down right now and look at what's happening on his property, he would go, man, that's good. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What was your impression?
Oh, I can't say it any better than that. I definitely, like I said earlier, he would love it. It's a beautiful place. The very large area. I don't know how many acres are there. I did finally on the last day get to walk more in the tree line behind the property, because most of the stages and everything we were at, you know, we're all in the I guess it would have been the pasture area, out in the grassy mowed area, and then it's surrounded by trees. And there is a little creek and a little bit bigger river behind the property. And there's a trail that goes back there. And so I was able to walk that the last day, finally. It's really beautiful down in there. I was struck by how few mosquitoes there were. I expected it to be a lot. But I can see why Johnny Cash kept this place, you know. And it was, as I said, it was his respite place. And his nephew, who lives there, he mentioned that, you know, this was the best years of Johnny's life was on this farm. You know, it was the last 30 years of his life when he had finally gotten over his alcohol abuse and just was able to just enjoy life with his friends and music and just be John Cash here, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that. I was like, yeah, this is, you've seen the movie. I've seen the movie, and just see how Johnny Cash's life was, you know, kind of a train wreck for a lot of it, but not this time, you know, this hideaway farm where we're at, you know, this one, he had gotten his life together. He had straightened things out, you know, for the most part, at least the latter part of it. And it's a great place.
As you're walking around, you can totally see where Johnny had his ability to put his influence on it. And, you know, all the way down to his last Cadillac that he ever purchased is still sitting on grounds, doesn't run. Hood's up, grass is growing around it. It's a black Cadillac. And I'm like, man, that is so fitting. His last Caddy he ever bought is just sitting on the property, not running.
I don't know if you knew this or not, but the one of the stages we set up was in the old horse barn that was behind the big barn. What we referred to as the NBBY, the Nashville
Big Backyard.
Yeah, that's what it was. But all in it, it's kind of like a lean-to, if you know what that is. But it's narrow and long, and one end is all open, and one side is all open.
At one point, they called it the carport.
Exactly my point. The one lady who was working the booth right next to that, she had been there before, where that was all full of Johnny Cash's cars in there. I don't know where they moved them, but they moved them all out for this event. And I would have loved to have gotten a picture of all those, because they said one of them is sitting in the weeds out back. You know, these are the ones that aren't sitting in the weeds. No, pretty cool. I loved the idea on the one side of the house, which the house is an old log cabin. Johnny Cash's nephew said it's the second oldest house in the county. It's been added onto the back, but the front, it's a log cabin, and you can clearly see that it's a log cabin. But on the side of it, there's a little porch with some chairs there that overlooks a little pond. And they said that Johnny Cash liked to take his meals at night sometimes with his plate and his forks and walk over to the other side of the pond, because he'd get a better angle of the sunset over there. And he would sit and watch the sun go down. And then after he was done eating, he would just throw his dishware into the pond. And so... They drained a lot of the pond, and they dredged that side. They found all sorts of, you know, cups and dishes and forks and spoons that he had just tossed in there over the years, which I think is hilarious.
So one of the things that is amazing to me about this farm, about everything that's going on, is the amount of space you had and all of the rolling hills and just the beautiful layout it was. That in all of this, we could actually put a music festival on it. Like, that's pretty amazing. Yeah. Now, the bane of our existence of all of the music festival was the little area called The Hollow. And it's not that it was a terrible venue. Actually, it was a great venue. There's a lot of great bands. But what made it so difficult is it was at the bottom of a hill. And the only thing that would make that place a difficult place to be was if it rained.
Mm-hmm.
And rain it did
mm-hmm.
when we had to clean all that mess up. Yes. So you got four subs that are almost as tall as I am, and I'm 6 foot two, pretty wide. And we have four of those that we got to haul up it. We got the whole staging deck. We've got line array cabinets that need to all get torn down and packaged up. We've got lighting package. We've got the video walls. I mean, everything. And it's got to go in a box truck. And that was rough.
Yeah.
Now, you had to set up that stage and tear down that stage. So tell me your feelings about The Hollow.
Is this a family show?
This is a family show.
The stage, I understand, is new to Life Promotions, and there were no instructions for said stage. And when I showed up there, the volunteers were trying to figure out how to put the stage together, and would be okay normally, you know, to take a bunch of time to set the stage up. But the tent that the stage needed to go in didn't get set up until a day later than it was supposed to.
And so, yes.
So it put crunch time. So not only do we have to build the stage, but this is outside of the main stage. This is the second largest stage. So it's got the LED wall that needs to go up. It's got all the lights, the backline gear. There's a lot of stuff that needs to go. So spending a lot of time on the stage is not ideal. And we couldn't figure it out. And then Jeremy showed up and gave his wisdom. That was very helpful. And it took us a step closer to getting the stage up. And then we hit another roadblock. And then Thomas showed up. And Thomas goes, I think you are using the wrong connector. And once he turned them the right way, the whole thing went together. And and that was awesome. So I'm ready to put that stage together again another time. But it just took so long. And that was my problem is Thursday. So we were setting that stage up until noon. Well, the first band was loading in at noon on that stage. And we were getting all the backline gear and there wasn't a plethora of volunteers. And so I was taking care of all the backline gear. Some of those amps and cabs weigh quite a bit. And I was like, I'll just take care of it myself. And by Thursday night, my back was sore. I was exhausted. And this was day one of the event. And I went, oh my. Now, thankfully, it got better from there. I actually felt more rested Friday and Saturday. So thankfully. But that stage does not have fond memories for me at all. Because then, as you said, then we had the rain and the mud, and we had to tear that sucker down till 4 o'clock in the morning. So no, the hollow rings hollow in my soul.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm. But going from stage building to stage playing, it's not like you didn't get to play at the event.
I did.
You and I had this wonderful experience where we were able to play at the kid zone.
Yep.
So most people would be like, the kid zone, that's lame. But I'm telling you, if you showed up during our set, it was actually extremely fun.
Extremely entertaining. You know, we had Happy Fun Time, the improv comedy group, hop on stage there and do a whole thing of improv comedy between us. And that got me thinking, I'm like, that's all we do, except change the word comedy to improv music. That's what was going on. We were improvising music the entire time. It was so off the wall, and we never played a song the same twice. And Sweat and Dean are so funny and so engaging.
They're amazing.
It was a blast. It was entertaining. It was enjoyable, and the musicianship actually wasn't that bad.
No, it was great. Actually, to start off every single set, we would just start playing some 80s song. And
because Dean
have no idea what the lyrics were, so he'd make them up on the fly.
and the first song we did, the bass player for ZZ Top had died that day. And so I started playing...
Oh, that's right.
I started playing LaGrange. And all Dean knew was, ho, 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 ho.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what he kept on doing. So I started whispering in his ear, and it didn't work very well. You know what?
And no.
Rumors going round in this sleepy town.
But we did that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, we did a lot of different songs, and it was a lot of fun. It was impromptu music. We had no set list. He would just say, hey, we're going to do this one now. And we had a key and an assemblance of chords in front of us. And then we would just start playing. It was a lot of fun. For those of you who have never done a gig where you don't have a set list, you just have a leader who calls out the song and you go, yeah, I have an idea of where that goes. Mm-hmm. It can be pretty liberating. Of course, you've got to be some sort of a musician in order to be able to handle that. But it was pretty fun.
Yeah, you'd played with Swen and Dean one other time.
Yes, I played with them a few times.
Okay. So this was years ago I played at Swen. Actually, the very first Power of One event, I played with Swen and a guy named Dewey, which you may not know that Swen always calls me Lyle. And I don't know if you know that that's tied to the very first Power of One event. Do you know this?
No, I have no idea.
I should probably say it even if you do. For the listening audience who wants to know. So we're a Power of One. We're the first band up there, and there's, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people at this thing. And Swen, who you never ever think gets rattled, he admitted to me later that he was pretty nervous. And so we got done playing a song, and then he decided to introduce the band. And behind him was a friend of ours, Dave Scharnhorst, playing bass. Lowell Mickelson, who plays band with me in the Echelon band, was playing drums. I was playing guitar, and then Dewey was over there. So Swen turns around. And he's like, I would introduce the band. Back behind me, I've got Gene and Greg and Lyle over there. And we all thought he was just, you know, being Swen. And he told me later, his mind totally blanked on our names. He didn't remember at all. And so he introduced me as Lyle. I don't know if you caught that. He introduced me as Lyle.
That's awesome.
Over there. Because I've been Lyle to him ever since. Every once in a while.
I completely missed it.
Every once in a while, he tells me, I do know your name isn't Lyle. Yeah. But anyway, so no.
I love it. It was great.
Yeah, it was really great. I enjoyed it a lot. I was probably a little bit more focused, having never played with their newer songs, and I wasn't sure what they all were either. And because I could see Swen's hand, the angle of where he was standing, I could watch his hands. And so I did focus a lot on, okay, what key is he playing in, you know, at least to get the idea at first. And then I like to actually just listen to the music and not focus so much on that, you know?
Yeah.
And just feel it. And I usually play better that way.
Well, speaking of playing, so I played a 65 Gibson EBO bass into an HX Stomp. It looks like an SG, but it's a bass, and it's short scale, and I put flat wounds on it, and I was worried it was going to be like woofy and too low and like not cut through a mix. But interestingly enough, in our second to last set we played, the guy that was sitting in front of me while I was playing, we had a time where we took a little band break. And I went and I sat down, and he was like, hey, come here. And I kind of leaned over and he said, man, that bass sounds great.
Hmm.
I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. He said, I owned one just like it. It doesn't cut through the mix like any other bass. It's just all on its own. Man, it just sounds so good. And it made me feel good inside.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that guy's name was because I was busy trying to get back on stage after. But
nice.
So that guy,
nice.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Well, I had
so
you
what
in
did
my,
you end up playing?
I had you in my monitor, and I thought you sounded great. I loved it.
Thank you.
No thought, no complaints at all. What did I play? I brought my new-to-me 2018 Player Series Tele. And, for a cheap, it's the replacement for the Mexican Teles.
Right.
And it's called the Player Series because, yeah, you don't have to worry about it. Go out and play. But I haven't done anything to it. I'm not sure if I will. There's certain things. I have a Boss EQ pedal that I do bump a little bit of frequency, you know, a little bit, just to give it a little bit more girth. But it really, it sounds great just like that. No reason to mess with it. I played that into the backline AC-15, and I played pretty clean. I had a series of overdrives that I did kick on occasionally, but a lot of times I just used a boost pedal, plugged into the normal channel of that, and just ran it fairly clean for most of the songs we were doing. I did put a touch of delay on. I don't know if you noticed that on.
I did notice the delay. Yeah,
I did. With the tap tempo, I could sync it up with the tune, and I like that.
Yeah, it sounded really good. I know that you worried about it being too like shrill and bright for what was going on, but you know the thing is that a lot of times when you know tone and you know where you're supposed to sit in a mix, you tend to dial out those frequencies that make things shrill because you're not going to have a good time.
Yeah.
So you naturally do that. And so now then after you're done with all that, you're at the mercy of the sound tech. And our sound tech, Danny Mack, did a really good job of making sure
that
everything mixed really, really well.
And that's all the years I've been playing. Every sound guy that I've ever been with, they know that's the one thing I want to know. It's funny, out of all the frequencies, I don't seem to worry about all the other frequencies, but I'm always like, you know, because guitar, to cut through the it really is, it's the upper mids. It's bright. The guitar is. But like we've talked about many times, there's a difference between bright and shrill, you know?
Yeah.
Bright, I don't mind. As long as it's full and bright and it fits in air, not, doesn't piercing, you know, doesn't take your head off. And tellies are by nature bright. And so, you know, I asked Danny, you know, the question I always ask, I'm like, is it too bright? And he told me a couple times, he's like, nope, sounds good. Cause yeah, even though I was amazed, I had the tone cut, because that's the only option you have on the normal channel.
Right.
I had it at like 4 o'clock. So I was cutting it quite a bit. I don't know where you run that for your telly.
I probably run it more closer to 2 o'clock. So I cut it quite a bit too, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was at 4. So that telly is brighter than yours then. But I know it sounded good. I did find myself going, I could use for that show anyway. I used to own a compressor that I hardly ever used. For what we were doing there with that telly and everything, I was like, I could use a compressor up at the front and just squish this a little bit and it would be awesome.
Isn't it the Keeley one, the four-knob Keeley or the two-knob Keeley?
I had the four-knob Keeley initially for a while, but I hardly ever used it, so I just sold it.
Yeah.
I don't know what you know about compression pedals. Today I was at a pawn shop where there was a TC Electronics compression pedal that just had 3 knobs. For $40, I almost bought it, but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. TC Electronics, that's a decent one.
I know. It was $40. So.
But you know, that's the problem. Pedals keep going up in price, which is really interesting to me, because if you look at the law of supply and demand, there's a lot of supply of pedal out there right now.
Yeah.
But yet the price keeps going up, and it's really quite confusing to me. But you're also talking to the guy who's like, yeah, just give me an M9 or an M13 or a HXFX and
I'm good.
The audience won't know. So I'm good.
Yeah. 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 I haven't moved on to that yet. I still pull out my pedal board. Still works.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's good.
Well, all this should probably bring us to our final thoughts. You know, what are your final thoughts when it comes to LifeFest, Tennessee, Music City?
Well, you walked around there and said you thought a few times about, I wonder what Johnny Cash would think about what's going on right here. I walked around thinking, this is like Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. There wasn't a large amount of people there. I think Life Promotions had a realistic idea of how many people would probably come to the first one, but they hoped for more. There's a lot of room to grow. But what I loved is they did it to the nth degree. everything was stellar. You know, the stages, the sound, the food, it looks professional. So, and I think that's the way to do it. I think, you know, they built something of quality and they're like, all right, here's the people that came. Here's what we will do next year. We have a track record of what people can expect. And hopefully all the people that were there who were like, man, look at, because there's a lot of room to grow in that space. You know, the campground area was hardly used. And I expect next year to see it, you know, filled up more. And yeah, you build it, they will come. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I love the way that you put that, because that's what I was thinking too, as I was going around going, man, would Johnny love this? I mean, this is his property. Obviously, he's not around anymore, so it's not his property. It's somebody else's. But I look around and I was like, if he were still alive and someone were to approach him and say, I want to do this, what do you think? I mean, I would be leery and I'm sure he would be too. But the product that I saw was far outweighed by the amount of people who came. Yeah. And that right there just goes to show that as impressed as people should have been when they came, not saying that they were or weren't, I have no idea, but they're going to leave telling people. And I don't see how the next year doesn't become that much more, because it really was high quality production, high quality staging, high quality bands for a relatively high bang for buck. Like, you got a lot of value for the $1 you spent, you know? Yeah. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you'll do it again?
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Well, that concludes our time of the Tweed Couch Guitar Therapy session. If you liked what you heard, leave 5 stars and a review. Also, don't forget to check us out on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at The Tweed Couch. Until next time.